Welcome to Targeted, True Crime, Domestic Violence. We tell stories of those who were targeted by domestic abuse and investigate cases of family violence, using academic research to interpret the events. As a college professor, I think we need to stop making family violence a secret. It's time to tell our stories, use our experiences to help, heal, and provoke change. Targeted discusses sensitive information about abuse. Details may be graphic, and listener discretion is advised. I'm Mo Blackwell, the host of Targeted. We've discussed many types of abuse on Targeted, but we've never focused on one that was long distance and based online. Today's story will be quite different. As a 13-year-old, Cynthia felt like she was pretty grown up, and when a 19-year-old man paid her a lot of attention online, she was flattered, but she knew she had to hide the relationship from her family. As a kid of divorced parents, she felt a bit neglected by them, and when this man, Ryan, paid attention to her, it was like watering a withering plant. She enjoyed his focus on her, and it helped ease her loneliness. Unfortunately, she couldn't recognize his predatory requests and became embroiled in a relationship that impacted her life all the way through her first year in college. Abusive relationships aren't just physical. They can happen online, too. Cynthia begins by telling us how she first became involved with Ryan.
Before I met Ryan, the situation that led up to that was I was friends with a girl named Maggie on an MMO, massive multiplayer online. It's basically like a game with a lot of people online at one time, so multiplayer. So me and Maggie were pretty decent friends, I'd say. She always, for some reason, considered me a little sister. I never quite agreed with that, but you know what? Friends are friends. So I had fun with it. I was younger. I was about 11. In the game, you can, like, go on missions with people, you can do quests with them. Although me and her just kind of hung out in general. She was around 16 whenever I first met her. She would end up having a lot of relationships with people online in the game, so it kind of just seemed like online relationships were something I was more familiar with just because of how much she kind of talked about them. From what I recall, she always went for people a little bit older. I can't remember all the relationships she was in. There's another game online. It's a MOBA, which is a multiplayer online battle arena called League of Legends, which is pretty popular still nowadays. So her and Ryan's. So what happened there is that she somehow met him there, and they started a relationship, but it wasn't really a great relationship. See, Maggie had a few issues with emotional connections and actually keeping them around, and she was pretty insecure in herself, from what I recall. I did play a couple games with Maggie and Ryan, although not a ton. But then one day on Skype, Maggie contacts me and asks her to basically be a therapist for her and her dude. And I'm just like, you know what? Sure, why not? I was on vacation with my family in Georgia at that time, and I was just like, you know what? Sure, I'll take time out of dealing with my family to help y'all. The most prevalent issue I can remember them having was that Maggie, she went to a party, and she basically hooked up with a dude, but she said it didn't count because the guy's dick was only 2 inches. She's obviously cheated on Ryan, but, like, she won't admit that she did type thing. It's just like, no, it was only 2 inches, it doesn't count, and I'm just over here like, what in the world is going on? So somehow, me and Maggie dropped contact again. And, like, Ryan was super upset by this whole situation. Ryan was 19 at the time, and Maggie was 16 whenever Ryan was 19. And so what happens after their breakup is I, for some reason, reach out to Ryan. And, like, I wish him a happy birthday because literally we have the same birthday. And then I basically hit him up, and I'm just like, yeah, I agree with your side a lot more than I do with her side. Like, I don't know what she's thinking. Like, she has a few issues there that she needs to work out, and I can't help with that. So me and Ryan then start to develop a friendship, and we play games together because that's kind of the main thing you do as a child, is play video games. Maggie comes back into contact with Ryan. She's apologizing for all the things she's done, but then she sees how close me and Ryan have got. And it was just a very awkward situation. She says something along the lines of, well, if you two are so close, why don't you just date?
The dating relationship began. When parents worry about a predatory online relationship, this isn't exactly the scenario they're usually concerned about. What we parents usually worry about is a predator who's pretending to be a younger guy. We kind of think of it like on one of those shows, To Catch a Predator, where you have an adult who's pretending to be a different person. Research tells us, though, that what Cynthia experienced is the more likely danger. An adult who clearly reveals their age is met in an atmosphere where a friendly relationship develops and the underage kids don't recognize the grooming. They are simply enjoying the attention and feeling rather adult-ish. It's not like an episode of 2020 or 48 Hours. These predators aren't typically deceiving the kids. While parents are worried that the danger is going to be that this predator is going to fall in love with a child and obsessively stalk him or her to find out where this child lives, travel to their hometown and abduct the kid off the playground to sexually assault them and maybe sell them to a child pornography ring, that isn't the typical situation. The situation is much more prosaic than that. It almost seems bland considering the more sensational cases, which of course do exist. It's just that the sensational cases aren't the typical. What you'll hear from Cynthia today follows a more usual path, and it's one which every parent should be aware. An article that was published in the journal American Psychologist lays out the danger. Quote, most internet-initiated sex crimes involve adult men who use the internet to meet and seduce underage adolescents into sexual encounters. The offenders use internet communications such as instant messages, email, and chat rooms to meet and develop intimate relationships with the victims. In the great majority of cases, victims are aware that they are conversing online with adults. Unquote. No deception, no deceit, just a 19-year-old man dating a 14-year-old girl in the virtual world where she receives the attention she craves. For 14-year-old Cynthia, she thought this was a good thing. I asked her if her family was aware of the relationship.
They didn't know about the depth of the relationship. They knew that I spent a lot of time playing games with a dude named Ryan, but that was about it. I had had online friends in the past. Like, it wasn't a new thing for me to be close with one or two online friends. Now, I didn't ever date them, but I usually would be in groups of friends playing, and my mom wouldn't be suspicious because it was a constant thing. Like, if I'm playing games with this person. And generally, people I was friends with were around my age. I did lie to my mom about Ryan's age, though, because I had a slightly overbearing mother, which is sometimes a good thing. Because I had a slightly overbearing mother, my computer was downstairs where she could see me from her room, which was all fine and dandy, but I also had a phone which I would use to talk to him on Skype upstairs, and that was usually through late-night phone calls. Like, we would usually go to bed on a phone call, and he would usually end it because he was 3 hours ahead of me. I meant behind me in time zones.
I spoke with Cynthia's mom to see what her thoughts were. She believed that by having the computer in the main part of the house, that it would eliminate most problems naturally. She wasn't aware of Skype and assumed that her kids followed basic safety rules, such as not giving out their phone number. She now thinks that she was not overbearing enough. She wishes she had made a contract with her children to give her all their passwords for phones, computers, programs, and did a regular check of any type of messaging program, including gaming messaging.
So what happened after that is that, okay, so I would have been a freshman in high school whenever we first started dating. So at first, it's all good and well. I have a couple of friendships here and there, but he is a little bit jealous whenever it comes to other people and me spending time with them. So I didn't have, like, any outside of school relationships. I'd hang out with friends for, like, lunch and such, but then I would only spend time with him in the evenings. And that was usually in the form of playing video games such as League of Legends. And then we played a couple other games, but that was, our relationship was more so connection through games by playing games. And Of course, I guess we had those long night, starry-eyed talks. You know what I mean? The way his controllingness sort of evolved is that he didn't like me playing games with any other individuals other than him. Or like if I tried to play with someone else, he would get a bit irrational. And in things like League of Legends, there are ways to like purposefully lose the game. He would do those. And it would be so obnoxious. And I would become ticked at them. I was a passive-aggressive little girl back then. So if he threw a game, like, I would, like, not talk to him for a day or, like, not play for the day just because it's, like, if you're gonna do that and, like, cause my enjoyment to be nothing, like, I don't want to be around you for that day.
And did that change his behavior?
No.
Did it work?
No, absolutely not. Boy, was just as controlling as before.
Despite the controlling, Ryan still fulfilled important needs for Cynthia. It helped to obscure the red flags. The research tells us that most kids involved in these predatory relationships have a degree of satisfaction in them. They do not perceive themselves as victims. I asked Cynthia if she was happy in the relationship at that point.
I would have said it would have been good, but that's just me as a child talking. If I look back at it as more of an adult, I realized, holy crap, he was kind of creepy. So I would say at that point in time, I wasn't mad at the relationship. Like, he was giving me a support figure throughout the beginning years of high school, or the beginning year of high school. So freshman year, there's always a bit of a change. I was coming out of a private school into public schools, and I was having emotional troubles with connecting. Like, I just couldn't make friends. Like, I've always had troubles making friendships. And so he was a little bit of a support pillar there, where I would always have someone that would be willing to talk to me, which was a nice semblance of normality.
Early research into internet-based relationships by McKenna, Green, and Gleason gives some insight into the potency of an online relationship such as this one. Quote,
"The internet-initiated sex crimes that are romances from the perspective of young victims typically take place in isolation and secrecy, outside of oversight by peers, family members, and others in the youth's face-to-face social networks. This isolation may lead to relationships that form more quickly, involve greater self-disclosure, and develop with greater intensity than face-to-face relationships among peers."
Unquote. I've spoken with Cynthia outside of the interview, and I think this describes her relationship well. It was secret from most people. For those who did know about it in general, they didn't know the extent of it. The relationship formed very quickly, and at 14 years old, she felt as if she could trust Ryan more so than anyone else. Intense is an excellent way to summarize this relationship. Cynthia's relationship with Ryan included a sexual component, even though the two never met in person. It consisted of pictures or videos that would be legally categorized as child pornography. While the activity Ryan encouraged was illegal, Cynthia was willing. What's important here, for parents in particular, is to know that this is also typical. Many adolescents involved in sexualized relationships online with an adult are quite aware of the situation and are not distressed by it. In fact, newer psychological protocols call for careful handling by law enforcement and mental health professionals because these kids do not see themselves as victims, and it can cause a new level of damage when adults are freaking out around them. Even though it was an online relationship and Cynthia was willing, she was not of an age to consent to the relationship, and the transmission of sexual images and videos really was child pornography. It does not matter legally that she was willing. Cynthia talks about the sexual part of the relationship.
So whenever I was younger, since the dude is 19, a bit more experienced in life, so Ryan had had sex with over, like, maybe 12 girls at that point. And so we're familiar with it. And he was a horn dog. So this 19-year-old is sexting, chatting up a 14-year-old. And so I reciprocate because, you know, any attention at this point to me is positive attention. because I had been approached by predators in the past before, but never to this extent. So it would be things like, actually, it would be mainly me on camera. So I would, like, prop up my phone against, like, a blanket or something, and videos, I call it as mainly videos. Because on Skype you had a feature where you could easily send videos to people, and so, yeah, child pornography, technically speaking. I kind of reveled in the attention, to be honest. Like, if this was an easy way for me to get attention, then I was going to do it because I really liked attention, and I had siblings, but my parents were divorced, and I didn't really have any type of male figure ever prominent in my life. And so I think that kind of messed that up a bit as well. It's just like, oh, hey, I'm getting male attention. I really like this. It was kind of a feedback loop where I'm getting attention for this. I like this. It's like a positive response. I will continue doing this if I keep getting a positive response.
There came a point when the relationship ended. Cynthia describes it here.
My mom started getting a bit suspicious of how much time I spent with Ryan. And so what happened there was, she said, girl, you need to cut time with Ryan. Like, they're too big of a part of your life for you being a 14-year-old girl. And she basically said, go tell Ryan, like, you gotta start focusing on other things. And you gotta cut it out with Ryan. Basically break up with Ryan. I tell Ryan this, and he freaks out quite a bit. And he says something along the lines of, make your mom understand our relationship. So, because I'm passive-aggressive and very vindictive and very literal, I literally sat down with my mom and told her everything. I made her understand, and she was not a happy understander. And you know what? I think at that point I was okay with it. Like, I don't know, something in me just kind of snapped a bit with the way that he was talking to me, and I'm just like, you know what? Yeah, I'll make my mom understand. Me and my mom had a long discussion, and I did get punishments. Like, I got grounded. Like, things got taken away from me for a very long time. I had a watchdog app put on my phone to basically say, like, are you installing apps that you shouldn't be? Are you talking at late hours of the night with someone that you shouldn't be type thing? We also have a confrontation with Ryan, and that was kind of interesting. So my mom calls Ryan through my Skype, and she starts chewing him out a bit, and it's really funny. And I was a little bit mortified, but at the same time, it was really funny looking back on it. And, like, she's just out here chewing out this 19-year-old saying, you should know better. I'm just like, yep, yeah, he should have known better. And I kind of loved it. She does end up filing an online cybercrime report saying that this person is soliciting child porn. But the thing is, I didn't have that much information on Ryan. Like, I knew their first name, I knew their last name, but it's a common name. And I knew where they lived, but only the state that they lived in. I didn't know what street, I didn't know what city, I didn't know anything. And I don't know why I never tried to get that information either. So the report went nowhere. Absolutely nowhere.
We are going to take a moment to hear a word from our sponsors. When we come back, we'll learn a bit from Cynthia's mother's perspective. When I spoke with Cynthia's mom, I asked her about the reporting process, what happened, and what she'd hoped to accomplish. I didn't record this interview. I wanted Cynthia's voice to be the only one you hear because this is her story. I simply wanted her mom to give information to fill in some of the blanks. Cynthia's mom researched online how to report a child predator, and she found the Cyber Tip Line, which is run by the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, also known as NCMEC. N-C-M-E-C, NCMEC. The toll-free hotline was established in 1997 so that people could report child sexual exploitation, including online enticement of children for sexual acts. She filled out the form online and was sent an email within a few days telling her that the tip was given to the Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force, that's ICAC, and giving her the name of a person she could contact in her own state. When she talked with that person, he said there was absolutely nothing he could do in their state, and it would be better to speak with someone in California since that is where the perpetrator lived. The case was given over to the Los Angeles Police Department and seemed to go nowhere. When she called them to talk with the officer assigned in California, she found out that the case was given to a homicide detective who seemed much too busy working on, well, homicide cases. She reached out to a local deputy in her hometown, and he tried to help by coordinating with the LA police. At first, it seemed to help, as the LA police warned them not to let Ryan know about the law enforcement involvement because they did not want to give him the opportunity to erase the images from his phone or computer. Unfortunately, though, no headway was ever made. While the LA police indicated they were hampered by not knowing his exact address, she was able to find out a bit more information than her daughter knew and had tracked him down to Santa Monica, California. She thinks she was able to find an address to give to police based on internet sleuthing, but she's actually not sure anymore if that really happened or if she just hoped that it happened, pictured it in her head, and that's the memory she has now is based on more of a fantasy of finding it. The LA Police Department still didn't seem to be doing much. Cynthia's mom felt like she was pestering them and got the distinct impression that the sexual exploitation of her young daughter was way down at the end of their priority list. But she did think that, at a minimum, some sort of contact was made with the man, and she hoped that it might scare him into stopping that sort of behavior in the future. Even though no justice seemed to be happening for her daughter, she assumed that she had done enough to scare this man off from doing it again. She found out years later, though, that he was never even contacted, and it looks like nothing was ever done. At the end of the experience, Cynthia's mom put a lot of controls on her daughter's phone and computer so that this type of thing could not happen again. She told me that she never wanted to do anything sneaky, though, so she told Cynthia exactly what she was installing and what the apps would do. She used the application called My Mobile Watchdog. It sent the mom every single text, every single email that her daughter sent or received. It also kept Cynthia from downloading chat apps without her permission, so she was able to make sure that something like Skype was not installed on the phone. It also sent a log of every web page that was visited by Cynthia. It didn't seem to cause a lot of friction between mother and daughter. Both seemed to adapt to the new situation, even though neither of them liked it. The extreme monitoring lasted about a year, in which time Cynthia seemed to flourish. She moved schools, found new friends, and started dating a boy at her school she spent a lot of time with, all the while her mom receiving every message sent between them by the app. After a fairly intense relationship, Cynthia broke up with that boy. She got a new phone. The app didn't install correctly on the new phone, but it was more than a year after she had reported Ryan on the cyber tip line to the Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force, so it didn't seem as if extreme monitoring was needed anymore. Cynthia's mom also felt like they had a pretty close relationship, especially after they had traveled internationally, sharing a room, and had spent a lot of time together. Cynthia had matured a lot over the years, so her mom brushed away any worried thoughts as being overprotective. Or, as Cynthia would say,
slightly overbearing.
Overbearing. We're winding down this episode, so you might think that Cynthia's story is done and Ryan is out of her life forever. You'd be wrong, though. Next week on Targeted.
We kind of fell back into the same relationship patterns. He didn't really allow me to have friends. He didn't like me being around other people. He wanted all my attention on him all the time. So going back to the child pornography, 17 is still child pornography. And he had definitely pressured me to do things that I really didn't want to do.
Thanks so much for joining us at Targeted Podcast, True Crime, Domestic Violence. If you're interested in my sources or research, I include a bibliography on my website, www.targetedpodcast.com. If you want to support the show, please consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and writing a sentence or two about what you like. It helps other listeners to find us. If you have constructive criticism, I would like to hear it, but I'd appreciate an email about it. You can reach me at targetedpodcast@gmail.com. Targeted has a Facebook page and a Twitter account. Links to those will be in the show notes. We also have a Patreon account, which was recently revised so that you can gain early access to ad-free episodes for $1 each. If you want early access to all of the episodes in a month, it will be $4 most months, and there would be no expense for months when we do not have new episodes. Please stay tuned for the promos at the end of the podcast and check them out if they sound interesting. I'll include links to them in my show notes. As we end, let me emphasize that if you or someone you know is targeted by abuse, you are not alone. I've included some contact information in the show notes and on the website about a number of different organizations who can help. Leaving an abusive relationship can be one of the most dangerous times for a target, and I strongly encourage you to reach out for support. It may be the hardest thing you ever do, but it will be worth it. I'm Mo Blackwell, the host of Targeted. Peace, my friends. Peace.